Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, the Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on dead men's secrets when we come back. Hey, let me ask you a question. What do you think's wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it's pretty obvious by this time that something is wrong, very wrong, with the Ten Commandments, because they've been banned from our public schools. They're banned in our public institutions. They've been banned from our national consciousness. Now, instead of these 10 simple, time-tested laws, we see the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place, and they're now teaching the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, in our public institutions. We've made them a part now of our national psyche. And this is a pretty radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years. Are you aware, for instance, that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but your daughter can have an abortion arranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent? And that's why I contend that the solution to this moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. You know, our founding fathers practiced and they advocated the Ten Commandments. They even put 22 principles of that law into our federal constitution. And there's still at least one school left in America that teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties and the 33 benefits that we all receive for their observance. Now, you know, every law has a penalty, and you don't have to know what that penalty is to suffer from its effects. So whether you call that the Mosaic Law, the Law of God, Common Law, Natural Law, Karma, or something else, it's automatic, and it works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which just happen to be the natural penalties for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package? It's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general, and it's educational. It's an informative series, and it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free, and you can call and order one right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were talking about weaponry and nuclear weapons in the pre-flood era before, that is, before Noah's flood. But after Noah's flood, there was also a post-deluge civilization that possessed nuclear weapons. And I showed you last time that there were 25 separate sites around the world, 25 sites where you find green glass, which is the aftermath of a nuclear explosion on the ground, which fuses and melts the sand in the ground and turns it into this glass. We first saw it in the modern era at Alamogordo, New Mexico. After the first atomic bomb had been detonated, they looked down at the bottom and they said, "Wow, look at that. It is so hot that it just melts the elements and turns it into green glass." There are 25 sites around the world where we see that have been discovered, probably mostly by accident. And in many places, these are ancient cities that have been uncovered by archaeologists. You don't have to have a Rhodes scholarship to figure out that, we did not know about nuclear energy until 1945. So if there's 25 sites around the world where we find where nuclear bombs have been torched off prior to 1945, what's your conclusion? Now, on Easter Island, there's a unique wood carving. In fact, more than one. There's a number of unique wood carvings on the island. This is separate now from those big stone heads, those big stone carvings. There are wood carvings with Semitic features. Semitic. That's white man's features. And they show the effects of nuclear radiation on a human body, invariably representing an emaciated body with goitered glands, swollen groin, clenched mouth, wasted sunken cheeks, collapsed cervical vertebrae, and a distinct break between the lumbar and dorsal vertebrae, popped eyes, and distended stomach, all in remarkable detail. These are the unmistakable nightmare symptoms of exposure to severe dosage of nuclear radiation. Now, does this perhaps tie in with the remains of fiery destruction discovered on the island? Pioneer nuclear scientist Professor Frederick Soddy, he's a Nobel Prize winner and a discoverer of isotopes. He envisioned a past civilization which had mastered atomic energy. And he said, as far back as 1909, he said, "Can we not read into them, the prehistoric traditions, some justification for the belief that some former forgotten race of men attained not only to the knowledge that we have so recently won, but also to the power that is not yet ours?" The specter of past atomic warfare is increasingly more tenable as new information comes to light. Whatever we choose to imagine, there's always the hard fact that there is already too much evidence from too many parts of the world to call it nonsense. It is a fact, or it couldn't turn up so often. The secret was known. Inevitably, justification was found to use it. Civilization, populations, disappeared. Now, do we see that warning today? This is the jest to end all jesting. Once more, a universal time fuse has been lighted. Now, the wisdom and the technical splendor of the antediluvian civilization was so astounding that it was never and has not been to this day equaled. Even after the deluge, the reconstituted world system was conceived by races with an intelligence far superior to our own. And there's clear evidence, literally by the tons, that it was so. In many ways, their civilization was comparable to our own. They had air travel. They had underwater devices, submarines. They were very modern. I don't think you can construct that super civilization and find exactly another United States or Russia or China. They traveled on a different orientation, whether in lighting or transport. They reached the same results by a different method. And because of the fragmentary and incomplete nature of our present knowledge concerning them, any attempt by exposition is necessarily imperfect. However, the evidence points to scientific knowledge that was worldwide and worldwide all at the same time. And it appears that work stopped on a global scale more or less overnight. Genius, perverted by a materialistic philosophy, culminated in corruption and violence. And you know the sequel. Striking parallels exist between that period and our own today. More to the point, there are some ancient biblical prophecies that foretell the appearance in the sky of blood, fire, and mushroom pillars of smoke to occur in that final age when man acquires the ability to destroy the earth. It is stated plainly that the world's cities will be devastated and that the elements shall melt with fervent heat. And according to this, we are heading toward that day when everything stops, toward that moment when Earth's pendulum will shudder and stop in mid-swing. Now, there's something unique about Bible prophecy, and indeed, this book makes audacious claims for itself, actually challenging the world to prove whether it is a divine message to us or not, by testing its prophecies. Now, were you aware that one-third of the Bible is Bible prophecy? One-third of the entire book is dedicated to that one subject, just foretelling future events. And there's something else. It informs us that an unseen overlord has been quietly shaping human history, and that he will reveal his intentions before causing certain events to transpire. Now, come to think of it, the prophecies to date have been uncannily accurate. Events leading to the 20th century have been outlined step by step in correct sequence. Then there is the current scenario, our explosion of knowledge, the awakening to strength of weak Asian nations, a militarily aggressive Russia, the 1967 return of Israel to Jerusalem, a coming economic political union of 10 nations or groups of nations in Europe. And the list goes on and on. But all of these are to occur against a background of increasing earthquakes, famines, war, and unprecedented social breakdown. Then come predictions, more startling than fiction. Soon, uncontrollable panic grips the nations as they see no way out. Then a charismatic leader, already clearly identified, arises with the solution, the Hegelian solution. For the first time since ancient Babylon, all nations are now drawn into a one-world government. An electronic network already is in place, which makes it easy, makes it possible, makes it likely. The world leader cancels the existing currencies and establishes a worldwide numbering system. Every person on Earth is required to receive an imprint. Dissidents are not tolerated. For a short season, the planet is at peace. The world dictator is very popular. Now, the utter wickedness of this man is not exposed to the world until it's too late, when suddenly all hell breaks loose. World trade collapses. Religious extremism mounts. And we are plunged into a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation even to that time. Now, the scripture predicts that so great will be the devastation that unless the conflict is halted in midstream, no life will be left on planet Earth. And it will be stopped. It'll be stopped just in time, but only because of the supernatural intervention of our Creator, live and direct and in person. Undoubtedly, human history is racing toward some appalling catastrophe. The good news is that the Bible has clearly foreseen these events and revealed them. It does offer evidence that the Creator is still in control and will do what man cannot do, act decisively to save the human race from total annihilation. So, who's to blame? Human perversity is the main reason for the mess that the world is in today. But you may ask, well, is it likely that an all-powerful, caring Creator would allow any of His creation to go wrong? And the answer is, of course. You're witnessing it live and direct right now, today. If He decided to give men His free will, would this have happened? Well, tell me, would it be better? Would it be a better world if He had not given us free will, but instead controlled our every move like a cow chewing her cud in the field? What if we were just robots? You know, think about that. But as it is, we have freedom of choice, and we can demonstrate hatred or love, just as we prefer, just as we wish. So let's face it, if we did not have free will, then love, generosity, and other qualities would be unsatisfying, even meaningless. Life wouldn't be worth living. And as I said earlier, man has created noble, or he was created noble. He has perverted his own character by misusing the free will that his creator is giving. So no, you're not in a process of evolution which will enable you to create your own paradise here on earth. Such a philosophy is dangerous. It will lull millions into being unprepared for the eventual climactic events dead ahead. And as the prophecies lead us unerringly along the trail toward Armageddon, the flood of Noah sounds a warning. The information that we've dug up concerning our past suddenly becomes relevant, very relevant, like a time bomb or a time machine ready to explode. But after D-Day, then what? For those who choose it and qualify, there's a new world, a new world order. It's coming. It's just not what President Bush had in mind. It's a world in which eternal youth, love, loving concern, and security are the norm, where transformed individuals are able to live in harmony. Now, if all of this is true, then I suppose people aplenty are going to miss out, and wouldn't some of them just love to be there? Think of it. It's a whole new world to mess up. I thought that was a pretty good epilogue. Thought I'd share it with you. Now, there's one last item over here called astronomy that I thought I would point out as kind of a concluding scenario here for you to consider. Now, remember, Jonathan Gray put together 969 records from around the world that point to ancient civilization. Things such as microscopes and glasswork, geography, astronomy, cosmology, mathematics, metallurgy, large-scale construction, construction techniques, social organization and engineering, mechanical devices, everyday items, clothing, art, medicine, flight, space travel, ancient science, civilization, electricity, weaponry. I just concluded weaponry because the nuclear option is now on the table. And we're talking almost daily about, in the news, you know, daily, about Iran obtaining nuclear weapons, and President Bush says we'll never allow that to happen. Iran is now aligned with Russia and China, who have nuclear weapons. It's a Muslim country. Pakistan is a Muslim country. They have nuclear weapons. There's a big fight brewing between the Muslims and the Jews. And the Battle of Armageddon is scheduled in the Valley of Megiddo, 35 miles northwest of Jerusalem. All of the elements are in place. Now, in conclusion, let me take a look here at 92 records of astronomy worldwide, such as the round Earth, the Earth's diameter, and the Earth's orbit, which were all known and all recorded by ancient civilizations for us today. Think of this. As I first researched this, Earth's unmanned spacecraft Voyager 2 was hurtling beyond Uranus toward the planet Neptune for a rendezvous in 1989. On August 24th that year, yes, the exact day was known. August 24th, 1989. It was calculated to swing around past Neptune and then head off out into the solar system forever, into unknown deep space. Now, was it as recently as the 19th century, just 200 years ago, that most people thought the Earth that we live on was flat, that it was the center of the universe, surrounded by a distant vault of fixed stars, and that the planets and the sun moved around us? You know, that's right. The Earth cannot be a ball, said one prominent scientist of the time. Otherwise, the people on the lower half would fall off into the void. Even the great Kepler, not so much earlier, had said that there were only 1,005 stars. So long did ignorance prevail that we assume that ignorance has always been the norm. Now enjoy a taste of a great surprise. Contrary to history as we know it, as we learned it in college and high school, in that remote period that we call prehistory, there existed an embarrassing wealth of astronomical knowledge. And may I suggest that the more that one looks into it, the more you will feel that a race of scientific giants has preceded us. Now, that conclusion is unavoidable, that the astronomers of Babylon, India, and Egypt either possessed sophisticated instruments themselves, such as telescopes, or they were the custodians of a prehistoric science that came from a mother civilization and was passed down to them. Even later, among the classical Greeks, the Romans, there were sages who still had access to a body of knowledge extending back into the dim past. The nations with particular knowledge cited below were not alone in possessing this knowledge. This science must have been universal at first, but remember, the surviving evidence is fragmentary. So let's take a look at the Earth itself. In Egypt, China, England, Guatemala, Bolivia, Greece, India, Samaria, Babylon, Assyria, the Hittites, Asia Minor, and from the Bible, all reveal that the earth is round, that the earth is a sphere surrounded by the heavens. The Sumerians, for example, identified, named, and grouped the constellations of both the northern and the southern hemisphere to the South Pole. For example, the complete skies of a global, not a flat earth. Egypt's pyramid builders could project maps from spherical to flat surfaces, which shows that they knew that the earth was round. And they calculated the shape and the size of the earth far more accurately than anybody before the mid-19th century. Now in China and Greece, the earth is slightly egg or pear-shaped, and modern science agrees. Our distorted sphere is a little bit pear-shaped with a bulge in the southern hemisphere, and that was known in China and Greece. Now, in India, China, Greece, Rome, and from the Bible, we learn that the earth floats in space. From Egypt, Greece, China, India, and the Bible, we learn that the earth spins on its axis in 24 hours. The circuit of the earth, that is, the earth in its courses, the seeming rotation of the stars is due to the earth's revolving on its axis, was well known in Greece as far back as 2000 B.C., and it was recorded on Khonsu papyrus in Egypt in 1000 B.C. Now, in Babylon, Egypt, India, and Greece, they all knew that the earth revolves around the sun. That wasn't discovered until Galileo had his famous run-in with the Pope, remember? In Greece, the orbit of the earth is elliptical, that is, oval-shaped. The earth revolves in an oblique circle while it rotates at the same time about its own axis. Then, in Egypt, India, Guatemala, Chaldea, England, and Greece, the size of the earth was known. A circumference difference from our modern calculation of only 225 miles was recorded in Egypt. The diameter was computed to be 7,840 miles compared to our calculation of 7,926.7 miles. In Guatemala, the weight of the earth had been calculated. In Babylon and Egypt, the exact length of the year, with the earth's solar year of 365.2420 days. In Guatemala, whereas we know it to be 365.2422 days. The annual movement of the sun and moon determined to an error of less than 9 seconds of an arc was calculated and recorded in Babylon. The exact length of the solar year, the sidereal year, and the anomalistic year seems likely to have been clearly understood in Egypt. In Greece, as early as 2000 BC, the seasons are caused by the Earth's rotation around the sun along the ecliptic. In Greece, an awareness of the torrid temperature and the frigid zones existing on our planet was well known. Now let's take a look at the moon. In India, the distance to the moon was calculated at 253,000 miles. By comparison, we calculate the maximum distance to the moon to be 252,710 miles. In Greece, Chaldea, India, and China, the moon's light is reflected. The moon illuminates the nights with borrowed light. In Greece, it was known that the moon circles around the earth. In England and the Arab countries, the path of the moon is an ellipse, varying closer or farther from the earth. In England and the Arabs, the variation exists in the moon's motion, an irregularity caused by the differences in the sun's pull at various points of the moon's orbit. This was discovered only by precision instruments in the 17th century. Mexico has records of the length of the moon's cycle calculated accurately to within 4/10,000 of a day. And during the lunar month, the duration of the lunar month is 29.53020 days according to the Köppen Maya, or 29.53086 days according to the Palenque Maya. Actually, we calculate it today as 29.53059 days. In Greece, ellipses, solar ellipses. It is the moon that darkens the sun. In Greece and Chaldea, lunar eclipses. It is the earth's shadow that falls on the moon. In Babylon and England, accurate forecasting of eclipses to fractions of a second of an arc were recorded. And the present methods of calculation established in 1857 included an error of 7/10 of a second of an arc in estimating the movement of the sun. Babylon's calculation was 2/10 of a second nearer to the truth. The maximum amplitude of the moon's wobble, which occurs immediately before the seasons of lunar eclipses, was observed in England as early as 2000 BC and clearly recorded. Now, to predict an eclipse, however, three checkpoints at 120 degrees longitude distance from each other must first be established and information communicated from each of them. In England, in 2000 BC, there is a 56-year cycle to moon eclipse patterns. In Babylon, China, Greece, and Rome, the moon exerts an attraction on Earth's tides. Only 300 years ago, Kepler was criticized for making this same conclusion. In Greece, the moon has a two-week-long 15 times longer than ours. That is, the moon has a two-week-long day, which is 15 times longer than ours. That was known in Greece. In China, 1700 BC, the lunar month has a precise length of 29.530516 days. Our modern calendars are only 8/100,000 more accurate. In Greece, as early as 500 BC, the markings on the moon are shadows from high mountains and deep valleys. In China, Sumeria, the moon is dreary and cold wasteland. All right, let's pause here before we take a look at the ancients' knowledge of the sun and the planets. And let me remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. And we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law. From the scriptural perspective, that's 8 schools in all. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has a radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. But these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, they're mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. So for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, remember our website is georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the book called The Dead Men's Secrets. It's written by Jonathan Gray. You can go to their website. It's www.teachservices.com. www.teachservices, teachservices.com. That's all one word. Now, T-E-A-C-H-S is all caps, and then E-R-V-I-C-E-S is lowercase. Jonathan Gray, the author, 350 pages or so, 969 records, and I'm closing the program with these records of astronomical events, because the astronomy of it is a clincher in my mind. You know, you can sit there and say, well, I don't believe that those glass puddles around the world equal atomic war. Or you might say, well, it's just a coincidence that these people have metallurgy, or that we found an aluminum cup in an old grave somewhere over in Pakistan. But as I pointed out, aluminum technology didn't come to modern man until 1804. It wasn't until 1859 that we were able to separate bauxite, that is aluminum, or take the aluminum out of the bauxite. And in order to mass produce aluminum, you've got to have massive amounts of electricity. And there are numerous examples of aluminum around the world. In fact, aluminum foil, for crying out loud, was known in South America at some point B.C. by the Incas. That's very telling, because if you've got aluminum, you've got electricity. And we know they had electricity because they had metallurgy. You can electroplate, that is, taking gold and electroplating it onto your silverware, taking silver and electroplating it onto your eating utensils. Hell, we couldn't do that until 100 years ago. That isn't something, you know, that's been around for thousands of years, or that we knew about for thousands of years, like going back to the printing press, you know, with Gutenberg's movable type that we can actually identify. So I just wanted to point out that Jonathan Gray's done a great job. You've heard of some of these ancient marvels. Maybe you saw it on the History Channel, or maybe you saw it on Discovery or something like that, but that's where I saw a few of these. But 969 of these records just boggles your mind. I mean, this guy has put his pen to the paper, and he's done his homework, and they're well documented. I mean, if you want to know where the glass is located, I mean, if you want to get in your car, drive out to the site, get out of your car, walk over and take a look at the green glass, you can do that in 25 places around the world. 25 places that are all older than Alamogordo, New Mexico in 1945, where we find the aftermath of a nuclear explosion, including Easter Island. Ha! Now that's a shocker. In fact, there's a place in China where there are 6 pyramids, all bigger than the great pyramids of Cheops in the Egyptian desert there at Cairo. And well documented, and here's where it's located, and you can go out and take a look at it with your own eyeballs, and there's pictures in the books and footnotes. And scientists and archaeologists know this. Museums have the evidence. It's in their basements. The batteries are on display. So the evidence is well known. It's hidden, and you're not told this, but that's because the textbooks are full of lies. They're not only withholding the evidence, I say they, the political establishment, that is your government, academia, your colleges, universities, your public schools, they're not only withholding the evidence, they're lying about the evidence that they have, telling you about evolution. Now, if you want to believe evolution, that's fine. It's no skin off my back one way or the other, but that's not true. It didn't happen that way. If you want to believe it happened that way, that's fine, but then there's another side to the story, and Jonathan Gray, I think, has done the job. It's a 1 in 100 book. I'm an old man, and I've never seen anything like it. And so if I haven't seen this book in 70 years, it's very unlikely that you've seen 5 more books that are better than this one. Now let's take a look at what did the ancients know about the sun? What did they know about the planets? Was there knowledge beyond our solar system? And if so, how'd they find out about the stars beyond our solar system? And what about the instruments that they were using? Let's take a look at some more. Plutarch knew that the distance to the sun is 804 million stadia. That's 91.4 million miles. Almost the same figure that we accept today. China, in the first century B.C., recorded that the stars, the sun, and the moon all float in empty space. In Greece, the relative sizes of the sun and moon were understood and recorded. In Guatemala, our sun is moving through space, carrying our family of planets along with it. It is circumnavigating a central fire. In Greece, the solar parallax, the apparent displacement of the sun amid the stars, because of the movement of the Earth in its orbit, was understood. And this was not noticed again until 1670. Taking a look at the planets. The planets are all globular in shape. The Aztecs had a ball game to simulate this. In Greece and Egypt, the order of the planets and distance from the sun was listed correctly. In Babylon, Sumeria, Assyria, and Greece, the planets revolve around the sun. Those that are shepherded by the sun was recorded in Sumeria. Mercury is the fastest moving planet. Its orbit is warped. Its surface is mercilessly baked by the sun, recorded in Assyria. In Babylon, Venus, a knowledge of Venus, moon-like, crescent phases, the horns of Venus, similar to those of the moon. However, this is invisible to the naked eye. Guatemala, the transit of Venus across the solar disk. Guatemala, Venus, the evening star, pattern is repeated in an 8-year cycle. It is true that Venus makes 13 revolutions of the sun for every 8 that our Earth makes. Guatemala, a year on Venus is 584 days long. Our modern computers agree, placing it at 583.82 days. Assyria, Venus, has a diaphanous gown of clouds. Its surface is hellish. True, we know today that there is sulfuric acid in its atmosphere. Though beautiful with its clouds, it is very destructive. In fact, the atmosphere is so dense it has easily crushed every Earth probe sent to the surface of Venus. Guatemala, Mars. The length of its year is accurately predicted. In Sumeria and Greece, Mars, two moons, and their distance from the planets was calculated. In Assyria, Mars, after long hope, it is a disappointment with no life as on Earth. Its surface is broken. There are 4 great volcanic boils present. These boils cause the nearby valley tears. Guatemala. Jupiter. An accurate awareness of the number of years and days that it takes Jupiter to circle once around the zodiac. In New Zealand, Jupiter's bands invisible except by telescope. Now get this. In New Zealand, they knew that there were bands around Jupiter, but it's invisible today without a telescope. What does that tell you? They had telescopes. Now, we didn't have a telescope until Galileo came along in the 15th century. Now, these astronomical observations, it reminds me of a story that I heard when I was a kid, and they were trying to explain how the ancients built the Great Pyramid. You know, that thing contains 2.3 million rocks, and whenever you watch one of these movies, you know, by Cecil B. DeMille, and they're dragging these rocks around, they've got thousands of people with ropes over their shoulders dragging these blocks of rock around on the ground. They don't have any levers. They don't have any pulleys. They don't have any wheels. They just drag the rocks around. How they raised these rocks up in the air is a mystery. Nobody knows. They know what the weight of the rocks are today. And The pyramid today, we know, it was just calculated in 1964. It's not all that long ago. It was within my lifetime. They calculated that the Great Pyramid is plus or minus 1/2 inch on square on all 4 corners. And I want to tell you, as a general contractor, hell, I can't build a house 1/2 inch on square on 4 corners. I don't know if anybody would even try. is necessary. But whoever built the Great Pyramid must have thought that it was necessary to put that thing to plus or minus one half of an inch, and they did. Furthermore, the Great Pyramid is built with expansion blocks. That's so that when the sun shines on one side of the pyramid, it expands faster than the rest of the pyramid. So it had to have grooves wherein that expansion could be absorbed. That takes modern engineering. When you build a bridge like the Golden Gate Bridge, it has to be built so that as the temperature rises, you can calculate the expansion of the steel. And on both ends of the bridge, there's an expansion grate on the deck. All bridges are built that way. It's not something that's new or just been discovered. But these people knew that way back in ancient times. Now, hey, boys and girls, you've got to have engineering knowledge. You've got to have engineering skill to even think of that. It's necessary. It's got to be there, or the thing won't work. Now, those pyramids work. They move with the expansion and contraction of the heat and cold, and it was calculated and put into them. But here's the kicker. I was told when I was a kid that in order to get that thing level, they had to have what they call a water level. And so those people, being ancient and dumb, they had to sew goat intestines together to make a hose. And then that's called a water level. And you fill the thing with water. And I believed it. Because I was expected to believe it, I guess. I didn't want to disappoint my instructors. And so they told us that these ancients in ancient times, you know, they were just emerging out of the dark ages, you know, of animal ancestry. And so they didn't have technology like we have today. They didn't have rubber balls. They didn't have rubber hoses. Of course, now Jonathan Gray goes out here and discovers, yeah, they had rubber. But anyway, I was expected to believe, and I did believe, that they leveled the Great Pyramid by pouring water into goat gut and leveling it up. Now, we weren't able to calculate the accuracy of the Great Pyramid until 1964 with a laser transit, but we're expected to believe that the guys that actually built that thing built it with goat gut. Boys and girls, let's wake up and face reality. They had at least the same technology when they built it as we had in 1964 when we were first able to calculate its accuracy. Unless you would believe that you could stack up 2.3 million rocks and get it square to within plus or minus one half inch by accident. Hell, I couldn't build an outhouse by accident that close. And furthermore, all of the pyramids are accurate. Furthermore, they're aligned with the astronomical signs in the universe. They're aligned with true north. They're aligned with the various planets, for crying out loud. Planets with orbits and with numbers that go along with them. Have you heard some of these numbers? You know, 583.82 days. And with calculations on the moon, you know, out to four or five or six decimal places, for crying out loud. And these are written records. These are written records that are well known by the Smithsonian Institution. But they're not publishing that. They hide it and they bury it. And you ought to be asking yourself this question. Why? Charlotte Isherby wrote a book called The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America. When you withhold that kind of information from people, there can only be one reason. We don't want you to know that. Why? Because we want you to remain ignorant. We have a political agenda. Here's what we want you to believe. Here's what we're going to teach you. That the pyramid was built with goat gut, but we couldn't calculate its accuracy until 1964 with a laser transit. I feel ashamed that I swallowed that line of horse pucky, but then I did. Didn't have any reason not to. Now in Assyria, Jupiter rages like the sun. We have now found that Jupiter's interior is much hotter than had been estimated, that it spews deadly radiation out into space. Jupiter wallows in a seething mass of hydrogen and helium gas clouds, forming a turbulent atmosphere, some planet. Tornadoes and cyclones whirled across its surface. Perhaps they've raged nonstop for thousands of years, so reported the Australasian Post of May 10, 1979, concerning Voyager 1's discovery in March of that year. The first sensation was when Voyager 1 detected and reported a blinding light above it, so strong that it appeared to sensors to be even brighter than the sun as seen from the Earth. It is an aurora which engulfs the whole of Jupiter. Jupiter sends out ray particles. Jupiter is the largest producer of rays in our solar system. Now, how did the Assyrians know that? Remember, the Assyrian Empire has been destroyed, you know, for thousands of years now. And so what we dig up in Assyria or Babylon out of these archaeological digs, you know, when we find these clay tablets and so on and we decipher them, you know, we read what these ancients had reported, you know. Did you know that these reports even existed? Has anybody ever told you that? First time I saw, numbers like this is when I read this chapter on secret planets. Are we in for more surprises here? The astronomical evidence that these ancients in the past had this kind of knowledge. In order to have this kind of knowledge, they had to have a Mount Palomar-sized telescope. Now, I wouldn't be a bit surprised, but what they had a Hubble telescope out here in Earth orbit. Because some of the information that's given here would indicate to me that in order for them to know this, they must have been dealing with space flight and space travel. In fact, he's got a chapter in here on ancient science, space travel and flight. I haven't covered all the chapters. I can't read the whole book to you here on the air, but I can review it. I can tell you some of the more sensational parts of it and the details. You know, if you're interested and you have to learn for yourself, you can get a copy of this book, by the way. If you can't find it anywhere else, let me suggest that you go to www.bravenewbookstore.com. Let's get on the web. It's bravenewbookstore.com. They got a phone. It's in Austin, Texas. It's 512-480-2503. That's 512-480-2503. Brave New Bookstore. The book here is published in 2004, so it's fairly recent. You should be able to get a copy of it at your local bookstore. Barnes & Noble is our local bookstore here in Springfield, and they usually carry a pretty good selection of books. And so I picked it up, and I couldn't believe what I was reading. I said, geez, I'm gonna review this. This is a 1 in 100 read. I grade books like this. It's a 1 in 20. That is, you know, you'll read 20 books, and then you'll find a book like this. This is one of those 1 in 100 books. This might be a 1 in 1,000 books. I'm pushing 70 and I've never read anything like it. Never seen anything like it. Didn't know it existed. I'll tell you what blew me away was this weaponry section over here, where there are 25 sites around the world that have the green glass that is produced only by nuclear explosions. Like the explosion at Alamogordo, New Mexico. And that's what blew me away. I said, oh my God, we've already had nuclear war on this planet. We've already had nuclear war on this planet. From the time that God in the antediluvian world took a look around and he said, you know, I'm going to destroy this thing with a worldwide flood. I'm going to wipe this thing out. He said, they only think of evil continually. It describes our world today to a T. All we think about today is war and rumors of war. It's just constant evil continually on planet Earth today. We're at about the same point that we were in Noah's day. And God judged the world in that time, and he's about to judge the world a second time. And he says, hey, this is coming, so pay attention, wake up, smell the coffee. And all we've done so far is give him the finger. But I would suggest that we think about that and say, well, I'm not really sure I want to give this guy the finger anymore. It might not be in our best interest. So that's where this section is here on astronomy. There's a couple more sections in here on astronomy how about beyond our solar system here in China? The blue of the sky is merely an optical illusion. In India and Greece, the universe is infinite. The distance to and between the stars is immeasurable. In Mali, the stars are much more distant than the planets. In India, Greece, and from the Bible, the stars cannot be numbered. In Greece, the stars are blazing suns like our sun, and some of them are larger than our sun. In Sumeria and Greece, each star is the center of a planetary system. On June 13, 1984, Dr. Hartmut Amon announced to the American Astronomical Society that 40 nearby stars show excess infrared emission, suggesting that they may be orbited by solid material or even planets. You know, we just have come to that understanding or that knowledge within my lifetime. And these ancient people already knew about it and wrote about it. How did they know? Where did they get the information? 6 months later, Professor Donald McCarthy and Frank Lowe from the University of Arizona claim to have actually discovered a planet moving around the Van Beesbrock 8 star in the Ophiuchus constellation, some 21 light years, that's 125,000 billion miles from Earth. It had a mass 30 to 80 times that of our Jupiter. Credit for this first discovered planet outside our solar system was counterclaimed by Professor Robert Harrington of the Washington Naval Observatory, who said he saw the planet 18 months earlier with two other astronomers. Now, we have just recently come to the conclusion that there are planets orbiting these stars out in space. Now, that's information that was known in Sumeria and Greece at least 2,000 years ago. How did they know that? Did they have telescopes? Did they have a science, a technology, an astronomy equal to where we're at today, and perhaps even farther advanced than ours today? Because much of what's reported here in the book, Dead Men's Secrets, we don't have any technology to duplicate what they did back 2,000-3,000 years ago. Now, that's a thought for you. Well, I'm about out of time again here, boys and girls, so we'll have to leave it right there. Remember, the book is called Dead Men's Secrets, Jonathan Gray. You can get them at www.teachservices.com. All right, we're about out of time, so let me remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet daily. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. We're open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Remember, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. That's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. We're going to have to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody. And good night, friends.